Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks, set the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
Now, normally I say we've got a huge show coming up, but I'm going to upgrade that to massive show, which is probably something I should have brought up in the podcast pre-meeting, but yeah. Is that something we can all agree on?
I would have liked some notice, but I'm happy with it.
You're happy with massive show? Nina, are you happy with massive show?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Nina's body language suggests
Nina's
otherwise.
I don't think she quite liked the spontaneity of the massive show, but it is a massive show. We've got Dan Hannon on the show today. We interviewed him on his tour of Australia with the IPA and the Menzies Research Centre. We had him for a strict 15 minutes and just before the IPA's event on Wednesday night. Really good interview. Got into a lot of Brexit stuff. Got into a lot of the state of political discourse. Really fun stuff. He's an absolute genius. And
I said breakfast instead of Brexit.
You did. So listen out for that. And we've also got IPA Campus Coordinator, no, National Manager of the IPA's Generation Liberty Program, the new title, Renee Gorman. She's in studio. A lot of you people have out there have really enjoyed our interviews with Renee over the phone and loved her story and some of the stashes she's had with the University of Sydney. We finally got her in studio to talk about her new role at the IPA, so that's going to be really exciting as well.
Definitely.
All right, so let's talk about some of the stories this week. So I think the big one is that free speech is officially dead in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, like you might have thought that it already was dead, but this is, in case you were still wondering.
Yeah, there was like some, you know, stories like, oh, it's getting a little better, and then no, today was the final nail in the coffin.
Yep.
So an Austrian woman accused of defaming the Prophet Muhammad is not protected by the right to freedom of expression, the European Court of Human Rights ruled today. So there's a lot to this story. So she was taken to an Austrian court. The Austrian court said, okay, this is, you shouldn't have said that.
And this is way back in 2009.
Yes, so way back. It's finally reached the European Court of Human Rights, said that the Austrian court had carefully balanced freedom of speech with, quote, the rights of others to have their religious feelings protected. So there's always been this free speech thing of, like, you know, to what extent does the freedom of speech impinge on other people's rights not to be offended? And now apparently there is an actual human right not to be offended.
That's right. Look, I think it's summed up well. It says, presenting objects of religious worship in a provocative way capable of hurting the feelings of the followers of that religion could be conceived as a malicious violation of the spirit of tolerance.
So why don't we just have blasphemy laws?
Well, we do.
why don't we just say it's illegal to say there is no God?
Yeah.
I just think, you know, the 1100s or whatever it is had it right.
Yeah, I reckon. Go back to first principles. No, because she had a couple of... She was conducting seminars about Islam in 2009 where she was critical of it effectively, and this is what has happened to her. And ironically, they've had to not release her name because she's not safe.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about this. So she's very critical of Muhammad and gets into the stuff. Like, it's not the best argument when you talk about Islam and stuff, but gets into the Muhammad child bride stuff. And then the European Court of Human Rights actually decided to weigh in on that sort of stuff, saying that there is a difference between child marriage and pedophilia. That's a ruling that got away from them. That's a ruling that, like, they started in the free speech stuff and then they just kept writing, and suddenly they're writing that sentence and it's like, oh, this is getting away from us. How do I get this back on track?
That's like, so, I mean, part of their ruling was what she said was untrue. And for it to be untrue, they had to make that argument.
Yeah.
And then that's where we're at.
Yeah. It got away from them. They got into areas they really weren't comfortable getting into.
So read up on that. We included a link in, hey, what did I miss yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, this one went all around the world. It's a huge story. Just blasphemy laws are just such an archaic thing and they're on the way back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we talk about, you know, we think, gee, how stupid is the EU, but we have blasphemy laws in many states in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Shall we move on to another story, Pete?
Let's move on to another story. This is much more optimistic. It's about, you always hear all the time that the rich capture all the gains from economic growth.
Yes.
And Russ Roberts in Medium. Russ Roberts is a co-host of the Econ Talk podcast.
Yeah, really good stuff. He uses a lot of their links in Hey, Russ Roberts.
He's a great source of making our jobs easier, which is fantastic. And he's done this terrific article last week, Do the Rich Capture All the Gains from Economic Growth? Of course, we hear all these people all the time saying that that's not the case. Obviously, unions and politicians and activists and stuff like that, but also quite some serious economists like Krugman and Stiglitz and one or two others who are currently escaped my mind, who say that, you know, wages haven't increased over the last few decades, in real terms, the middle income earners and lower income earners, their wages haven't increased really since the 70s, but rich people's wages have. He says, and he makes a very persuasive argument, that this is not the case. All of these studies fail to take into account a number of factors such as immigration, such as people getting older and a greater section of the population not working, which means that their income doesn't increase because they've retired. But apart from that, these studies fail to account for the fact that a lot of people, their income changes over time. And he goes through about half a dozen studies of these, and I won't go through them all, but what he says is a lot of people's incomes change over time, and that the incomes of poor and middle income earners over the last 40 years have increased. People have done better than their parents at a quicker rate than rich people. So, for example, let me go through it. A Pew Charitable Trust study showed that compared incomes in the early 60s to the early 2000s, and found that 84% of everyone did better than their parents, which is great. However, for the top quintile, this was only 70%, but for the bottom quintile, it was 93%. Furthermore, children from the poorest families ended up twice as well off as their parents when they became adults. Children in the top 20% did no better or worse on average.
My counterpoint is something I read in Teen Vogue the other week, okay, which is that the bankers just get fatter,
mm-hmm,
and the regular people are left out.
Well, be that as it may, James, that's a very good point. And Teen Vogue are running that argument, which is very effective. But he sums it up very well when he says the pessimistic story based on comparing snapshots at the economy at two different points in time misses the underlying dynamism of the American economy and does not accurately measure how workers at different places in the income distribution are doing over time.
Yeah, it's just the classic thing of everyone says, oh, you only support these kind of things because it makes the rich well off. And it's like, you know, I look forward to that never being said again now that there is actual proof that poor people are better off under economic growth.
Well, I mean, he always done his summarised half a dozen studies which are already out there. So, you know, this stuff is definitely there. It's just a matter of how you look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So if you want to read that, we featured it in Hey pretty prominently yesterday. You can go to Medium and read all of that. All right, I'll move on to another one. So Kanye West, back in the news. So this is an interesting one.
Yeah.
So Kanye West put out a tweet. This one went all around the world. So my eyes are now wide open and I realize I've been used to spread messages I don't believe in. I am distancing myself from politics and completely focusing on being creative. So,
what happened?
Kanye West has had a year. So, you know, he's like got involved in Make America Great Again. He's wearing the hat on stage at Saturday Night Live. He's been doing a lot of work with Candace Owens, who is a prominent campaigner of, you know, black people don't need the Democrat Party anymore. So that one went wild as in like, oh, Kanye West is turning his back on Trump and on Make America Great Again. I don't think it's that. I think it's more like the more I read about it, I think he's just falling out with Candace Owens. So there was a story like earlier this week that Candace Owens and so the Kanye had designed this shirts for this Blexit campaign, which is, you know, black people leaving the Democratic Party. I think we featured on Hey in the podcast a while ago, the Walk Away campaign.
That's right.
Yeah, and this seems to be an offshoot of that.
Very clever.
Yeah, yeah. Because Brexit, but Blexit.
That's it.
You see it? So, turns out Kanye West didn't design the shirts at all.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, there was a Candace Owens blog post about it. It seems to be that Candace Owens and the Blexit campaign, they were like, okay, Kanye West likes Candace Owens. Kanye West also knows the guy that runs Blexit. Therefore, Kanye West endorses what we're doing. And the first time Kanye West sees this, he is like, you know, Kanye West designed the t-shirts. And he goes, okay, I'm out on this. So he's out on that. I don't think he's out on Make America Great Again because he still retweeted a photo of like someone going as Kanye West and Kim Kardashian to Halloween. And the kid was wearing like a Make America Great Again hat.
Yeah.
And Kanye West deletes a lot of tweets. He'll go on a tweet storm, then delete all of them. So if that's still up there, he's still endorsing it.
I mean, Kanye's, you know, a fallen human like all of us.
Yes. And also, like, in 3 days' time, he might be back on. Like, yeah, it's just hard to predict with this guy. But that did go pretty wild.
I think, and I haven't got a 100% handle on the issue, James. You'll be surprised to find out. But I think she might have said, no, I never said that he did it. That was kind of a thing that got legs over time.
Yeah, that's also fair.
Who knows?
She's pretty heartbroken by it all. That being Candace Owens, but yeah, it's a weird one. And you know, Kanye West was never like the William F. Buckley of modern day conservatism, but so you know, there's a whole lot of people like, oh, we finally got Kanye. So like everyone was like, there was a lot of people going like, oh, Kanye West is going to be the new face of the Republican Party. And then, you know, I think I said at the time, like, a lot of this can be linked to he's got an album coming out.
Well, yeah.
So it's a weird one. The fact I think he'll be back in politics very shortly.
Well, I hope so, because the fact that he said he's not in politics anymore means it's going to be more difficult to get him on the podcast.
Yeah.
Which is even more difficult.
Well, now. And also, like, saying, you know, I don't really want to get involved in the presidential campaign is usually what people say just before they get involved in the presidential campaign. So the Kanye 2020, I don't think that's going away.
Yeah, so you still think he's going to run
I absolutely think he's going to run for president at least once.
At least he tried.
I think he'll try. I think he'll start running for president just after an election. Like, you know, he won't quite grasp the idea of like, oh, this is when you need to fill in the paperwork. I think he will just say, I'm running for president one day.
Okay.
And then that'll just start things.
Okay.
He could do well.
Just like Donald Trump before.
Exactly.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to run.
Yeah.
But he's running.
And then he's like, all right, let's figure out.
And now he's the president.
I've made the announcement. Now let's figure out what I need to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, you know, Kanye's affection for Trump stems from the fact that he recognises a fellow troll.
Well, the dragon energy as well.
The dragon troll energy and, you know, hates being told what to do and likes being controversial. Yeah. And I think that, you know, he's demonstrated that not all celebrities have to follow the company line. And that's
Yeah, positive. I think that's going to be, like, the main takeaway, like, 5 years from now is that it is possible for celebrities to not be Democrat and also successful.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I remember, of course, when Taylor Swift was copying all that flack for not getting involved in politics, I assume Kanye will get that from the same critics as she got it from.
Yeah. That Taylor Swift thing was interesting when she finally decided to, like, weigh in on a political campaign to endorse a Democrat in Tennessee. She's still a Republican. Like, it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, you have to be a Republican because, like, your team would have been looking for you to endorse a Democrat.
Yeah.
And you finally found, like, the one Democrat in a small state, not like, you know, Clinton or Obama or any of them. You finally found the one Democrat you can get around. And you're like, all right, full systems go. We're endorsing this person.
Yep.
Please don't look at anything else I endorse.
Is she even from there?
Yeah, she's from Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
I think. I don't know.
Let's run with it.
Let's go with it. Official podcast notes. She's from Tennessee and the moon landings were fake. Anyway, we've got one more topic we need to talk about at the top.
We do. The Tax Foundation. The Tax Foundation released a report called the International Tax Competitive Index last week. Only the 35 countries studied in this, which is not that many, but it's, you know, 35 good ones. I'm not sure. Australia had some...
Are you saying there's only 35 good countries there, Pete?
Absolutely not.
Wow.
What I am saying, though, is that Australia's results in this International Tax Competitive Index 2018 were pretty mediocre.
They got to work on that title. If my man Peter Gregory can't get the title out cleanly, you need to work on the title. How do you expect to go viral? How do you expect to get more than 35 countries involved in your study if you can't get a good title?
I find it hard to say lots of things, though. I've got quite chunky cheeks, which makes it hard to get my lips involved in this stuff.
Let me see them.
It's not really chunky there.
Oh, thanks, Nana, but yeah, it's quite heavy. Anyway, Australia, mediocre. Australia was ranked 19th for individual taxes and 27th for company taxes out of 35. Daniel Wald explained in the IPA review in May that this is due to our tax system and obviously red tape and obviously our energy policy and all the rest of it. My take on this, James,
go,
is that this is all just a bit meh, you know, like these results.
Mm.
Daniel Hanley told us on Wednesday night we have to be more optimistic about Australia. We have to realise that Australia was on the right side of World War I, World War II, and the Cold War, which is a good point, and we shouldn't be so negative, but gee.
It's a tough 19th. One to go, like, should we have tax reform? But we were on the right side of the Cold War.
It is. It's very just second rate, isn't it?
It's not great, yeah. So 27th for company, 19th for individual taxes is just meh.
Well, I mean, yeah, it doesn't have to be like this.
We can do better.
It's not that hard to make it better. I mean, I should be Prime Minister.
I would vote for you and I'd endorse you.
I definitely can't cop the hours.
Kanye Peter Gregory doubleheader would be something.
That would be great. That would be a great world meeting or something.
Because you could lay down some backing tracks on some of his songs as well.
I don't think me and Kanye could work together.
I think you could.
I couldn't handle his chaotic style.
Handle mine.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Cool. So there's a few things the IPA got up to this week. So we had the Dan Hannan event in Wednesday. Thanks so much to the members that came along to that. Hope you guys had a great time. Also the one in Perth. And if you are going to the CIS's John Bonython lecture, I hope you enjoy that as well. So the IPA, we have four op-eds this week. They are all available at ipa.org.au.
All fantastic.
Thank you. I didn't write any of them. So, but as official spokesman of the IPA, I thank you for
taking
that
credit for everything.
Comment. So we have John Roskam, the executive director here, the Liberals' Church Without a Pontiff. He's talking about how the Liberal Party doesn't really have any of great spokespeople anymore and people that set the tone. So I agree. for what it's worth. And you can read that on the website. Ministers Veto exposes the rot within the humanities from Dr. Bella Debrera, talking about the Simon Birmingham, the grants funding fracas. Is that how you say that?
Fracas. Oh, yeah. Fracas.
Hmm.
I don't know.
But I don't trust you with those chubby cheeks. What if you're mispronouncing them?
I always do the Bergen way.
Okay.
So maybe it is
the Peter Gregory story.
Maybe it's fracas.
All right. Anyway. So if you read up about the Simon Birmingham frou-frou-ra, maybe we'll go with that. You can read Bella's take on all of that. Give victims the right to appeal soft sentences. Andrew Bushnell, we've been talking about this in the show a fair bit. The idea of victims' rights in sentencing. You can go read that. And you've only got Dr. Jennifer Marahasi on Peter Ridd and the science of reef science, the Peter Ridd trial. It's coming up. So Jennifer Marahasi starts talking about what's really going on trial. You can go read that on the IPA website as well. So that's it for the start of the show. We'll go to those interviews with Dan Hannon and Renee Gorman. So excited for those. And but before we do, thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. We're available on all of the podcast platforms you can think of, iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Pocket Cast, any of them. Make sure you're telling your friends and family about the show. Make sure they can get involved. And if you are listening to us on iTunes, make sure you leave us that 5-star rating. Pete, you look like you've got something to say.
That the interview with Hannon is also on YouTube.
It is, yes. If you, for some reason, want to see Pete and I interview Hannon in person.
It's horrific.
It was like we were sitting very close to each other. Like,
I was
really
uncomfortable.
I was even closer than you.
Yeah. No, I was uncomfortable sitting next to you.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can really see that in your eyes. No, no, I can't.
This has got weird.
This got more out of hand than European Court of Human Rights' hearing. All right. Nina, if people like the IPA, if they want to get involved in what we're doing, where can people go if they want to become a member?
Well, just visit the website, ipadog.au, and click the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. All right, let's go to those interviews. Okay, we now welcome to the show. This is a huge moment for the show. One of our favourites, Dan Hannon, one of the engineers of Brexit. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So let's talk about it. So you are in Australia with the IPA and the Menzies Research Centre, and you're also going to be giving the John Bonython Lecture with the CIS. Now, you're here with the speech, Brexit, Democracy and the Future of Freedom. So I guess we'll start there. What do you make of where Brexit is at right now?
Well, big picture, we are becoming an independent country again, right? No state in the world ever got poorer as a result of becoming more independent and more democratic. So we shouldn't lose sight of the magnitude of what's happening. We have, I think, made a few mistakes over the last couple of years, and we've been in a weaker position since losing our parliamentary majority. So the short-term picture is less rosy than it might be. But I have no doubt that 10 years from now, people are going to look back and wonder what took us so long.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'll get into what is taking so long, because there is a lot of delays and there seems to be a new debate about what form Brexit should be taking right now. Mm. What do you put that down to?
Well, I mean, there's no secret about that. Anyone who doubted that there was such a thing as a British establishment over the last 2 years will have had any illusions dissolved. There's been a group of people in Parliament, in the media and in the civil service and in some big businesses who have simply not been prepared to accept the result. They've been prepared to work against it in collusion with overseas authorities. And this isn't a sort of conspiracy theory of mine. There are, you know, every week you see all of these guys, the Nick Cleggs and the Michael Heseltines and the Tony Blairs going to Brussels, writing newspaper articles on the continent, basically saying, hang tough, you know, don't concede anything. We might be able to capsize the whole process. So, of course, from the EU's point of view, why even engage in talks when you've got British Remainers doing your work for you and urging you to offer the worst possible deal in the hope that Britain will somehow drop the whole idea?
Absolutely.
So in light of that, what do you think the most likely outcome is? A softer breakfast, Brexit yeah. even, or a no deal?
I'm all in favour of softer breakfasts as well. I mean, I think, well, but put it like this. If the Remainer strategy is to try and get the worst possible deal in the hope that we will change our minds about Brexit, the danger is that they get the first part of what they want. I think it is now probably more likely than not that whatever deal is struck in Brussels will not get through the House of Commons. Particularly if we were to leave the EU but not recover control of our trade policy, that really would be the worst of all worlds. And that's what the Europhiles are now pushing, that we should stay in the European Union's customs union, which would mean that Brussels would control 100% of our trade policy with 0% input from us. It would mean that we wouldn't, you know, we'd still have to, you know, exclude Australian beef because it has the wrong hormones and all this kind of stuff. No other country would put itself in a position like that, you know. The Norwegians, the Swiss, they're as close as you can be institutionally to the EU without joining, and yet no one in their countries is seriously arguing that you should join the customs union and not have your own trade deals with China and so on. I mean, it's a completely ridiculous position. So we're in this bizarre world where a group of British Remainers are now deliberately arguing for a worse deal than the EU gives any other neighbouring country. Of course, that is not a very strong position from which to go into the talks. That's why I say that short term, it could be looking rosier.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, because of the, you talk about how there are people who are trying to make sure the Brexit doesn't happen, and that's now starting to really culminate in the people's vote. And we saw the marches.
Yeah, I mean, what was the last one? A penguin's vote?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. You know, no, that was a people's mistake. Yeah. They all stuffed up. Yeah. But anyway, so we were having a lot of fun on the show last week with London Mayor Sadiq Khan saying that there's nothing more democratic, nothing more British than trusting the people to have the final say on our future. Mm. Which Pete and I, as you say,
great,
like, that
yeah.
already happened.
Let's agree with that, Sadiq. Yeah, perfect. Good. Glad we're all on the same page. I mean, this is the real paradox, right? How on earth can we take seriously calls for a second referendum from people who, by definition, do not accept the result of a referendum, right? I mean, this is the madness. So what they're saying is, okay, we know we said this last time, but this time it really, really, really will be a final, deal that settles it once and for all. I mean, obviously,
unless they
vote wrong a second time, in which case, then there really will be a final. I mean, come on, how many times? Best of five, best of seven? Are we going to make it a regular test like the cricket? I mean, for goodness sake, everyone, particularly on the Remain side, everyone agreed last time that this was going to be it. This was going to be final.
So you think there's no chance of that happening?
I mean, you have to allow a possibility, but I wouldn't put it at more than about 10%. I think the likelier outcome, the more mainstream kind of Remain strategy is not to try and overturn Brexit altogether, but to try and ensure that if it has to happen, it happens without any of the advantages. Right. In other words, that we leave but stay in the customs union and continue to accept EU regulatory control. And that, I think, really would be worse than either staying or leaving, right? I mean, that would be staying subject to EU decisions but losing our veto. And that, whether you voted Remain or leave, that's got to be worse than either a clean break or just having stayed where we were.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of feel if there was a second referendum that there'd be like leave would win by an even bigger majority, just through people who are like borderline stay or leave just going, well, hang on, there's one side that's not even respecting the will of the people. Do you reckon that's anything to go about?
I think so, yes. I mean, British people, like Australian people, have a certain bloody-mindedness. And I mean, what do you do if somebody asks you exactly the same question again? What do? You repeat yourself, but with added emphasis, don't you? I mean, that's what we all do. And I think that would be the case here. Mm.
Do you think, so even though all the frustrations that have happened with the Brexit vote and stuff, do you still feel optimistic, thinking about all those British people reasserting their sovereignty and reasserting their rights? Like, that must still be a source of happiness.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's... it is the end of a weird aberration that for 40 years had us both giving up an element of our parliamentary democracy and our self-government, but also giving up an element of our global trading profile. I mean, before we joined the EEC, as it then was, we were part of a diverse, pluralist global trading network. Of countries that were linked by language and law and kinship and loyalty, but that were incredibly diverse economically. There were agrarian economies, there were commodity-based economies, and manufacturing countries, finance and services-based ones. It was a market that allowed you to swap on the back of differences. I'm not sure it ever really made sense for us to join, in those days, six other similar developed Western European economies. It certainly makes no sense today. We have moved so far beyond the world of the 70s when it, refrigeration was expensive and freight costs were high and you needed to be part of a regional bloc. I mean, I was looking this up. I was looking at the early never mind coming here by steamboat or sailboat, looking at what it was like to fly here in the early days of flights. Enoch Powell, the former Conservative MP, took up a post at Sydney University as the youngest professor anywhere in the Commonwealth at the time in 1938. He did 20 different flights between Crete and Indonesia, mainly on seaplanes. Right? And he noted that all but one of them were in British territory. That was a very different world. Okay. I flew to Perth on one uninterrupted flight. So the basic argument for the EU that we should abandon the community of free English-speaking nations on grounds of geographical proximity has just been completely overtaken by technology. Right? Geographical proximity doesn't matter anymore. What matters is cultural proximity. And the huge advantage we now have, the huge opportunity we have with Brexit, is to be able to create a nexus of trading countries which are united by a common approach to freedom and free markets. And, you know, where do you start that list? With the other common law Anglophone democracies, with Australia, New Zealand, US, Canada, Singapore, the countries that have that basic attitude to the rule of law and free markets that is friendly to trade and unfriendly to mercantilism.
Absolutely. I want to take you back to the actual day of the Brexit vote, if I could, because I remember it started to come in the afternoon for us, and I remember one of the first things I saw was Nigel Farage saying, you know, oh, we tried our best, you know, we're probably not going to get the result we wanted today. When did you start to feel that Leave might actually win? Were you confident on the day? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it could go both ways, but I got up quite early to get out the vote. I live in a little village on the Hampshire-Berkshire borders, and I voted myself, I guess, about 8 in the morning. British people, as you will have noticed, are generally very reserved and very good at avoiding eye contact. But that morning, my neighbours in the village were all making a point of catching my eye and smiling and giving me a little thumbs up. And that was when I began to think, oh, things are turning out okay.
Right, very cool.
It was always going to be touch and go. I mean, it was always going to be a close result. The funny thing is, I think a lot of Remainers never really believed the opinion polls. To be fair, it's always harder to imagine a change, right? It's always easier to imagine a continuation of the status quo than a new situation. So I think that the result was a real shock to a lot of people who'd voted Remain. They hadn't seen it coming, and there was a certain trauma. And that's created what is, for me, the single most regrettable thing about Brexit, which is the nastiness and incivility in public discourse over the last 2 years, which was curiously absent from the campaign itself. During the actual referendum campaign, people tended to have, of course, you know, strong differences of opinion, but within the bounds of normal political courtesy, we would talk about trade and immigration and the money and so on. The culture war has come since the result, and I think as a consequence of it, and the breakings of friendships and the ad hominem attacks and so on, and it's a very ugly and un-British way of doing politics. And you know, 2.5 years nearly on from the vote, there's no sign of it abating, which I think is really sad.
You wrote recently in your Washington Examiner piece about the growing tribalism in politics. You know, about what you're talking about here. Why do you think that is, and why do you think that's a problem?
It's a really good question. Lots of brilliant behavioral psychologists have addressed it and not really come up with an answer. Part of it, I think, is lack of an external enemy. You know, the mid to late 20th century for the West was an unusually homogenous time internally, and it was also, you know, people are less tribal when they feel threatened from the outside. So as long as the Cold War was on, you know, we felt we had something all in common with each other, and that weirdly stopped being true after 1989. Also, there was a homogeneity that came from everyone watching the same TV stations and so on, which isn't there anymore. But I think, in a way, we need to flip the question around. People are naturally quite tribal. It's a very human thing to judge an idea on the basis of whether you like the person advocating it rather than on the intrinsic merits of the idea. Yeah. We've had to train ourselves to do that. And I think we're now reverting to our earlier kind of natural partisanship, which is to say, well, if you know, if Tony Abbott says that, then I must be against it or whatever, you know, and which is a very sad thing, because it undoes the whole basis of modern Enlightenment-based societies, which is the ability to train yourself to be empirical.
Yeah, something we've noticed about Australians since we started the podcast is that they'll wait until Pete and I weigh in on an issue, and then they'll figure out amongst themselves what to think about that. I want to talk about that, because like we had this same conversation with Douglas Murray when he was on the show before. Do you think there's anything to, like, I mean, I see especially it on Twitter is where people will just be as uncivil as they can. Yep. And I just think it's something as natural as you don't get to see the person's face scrunch up and be sad. You're just screaming at a phone that's, you know, and then you see the retweets come in. It's like almost rewarding.
Yes, but you're also seeing something else on Twitter, which is that people are only aiming their comments at their own tribe. So if somebody says, "I hate Douglas Murray," then that comment isn't aimed at Douglas Murray. That comment is aimed at all of the other lefties. It's a kind of sign of the shared tribalism. Look, we all hate Douglas Murray, but guess what? I'm in the inner sanctum of purity because I've used even more offensive language about him than you have. And so you get into this, weirdly, this competitive virtue signaling where the nastier you can be about your opponents, the more you've signaled to the people on your side that you're okay. And I'm afraid I can see that having happened on both sides of the Brexit vote, which I think is a real pity, because there was a compromise to be had. You know, and I took the view. I remember appearing on the BBC as the results came in. It was about 6 a.m. on the Friday morning when it was just clear that we'd won, and saying, look, 52-48 is narrow. It's we've got to make sure that we carry both sides with us, and you know that's going to mean that we keep elements of the existing arrangements, and it's going to be a gradual phase recovery of power and so on. There was no market for that compromise. Nobody on either side was remotely interested in trying to reach out and find a compromise because of this tribal virtue signaling. So instead of pushing, you know, the logical thing for Remainers, you'd have thought after a result like that would have been to say, okay, it was a narrow outcome. We accept that we're leaving, but here are the bits that we really care about. Can we find a way of leaving that we can preserve these things, right? Instead of which, they went crazily down this road of people's vote and second referendum, which, you know, removed their voice from the conversation. But similarly, the response on the Leave side was kind of, you know, I'm more Brexity than you. And, you know, it was as though, I mean, for 25 years, the basic Brexit position was common market, not common government. You know, that we wanted to be kind of in a free trade agreement, not in a political union. Now that's become kind of soft Brexit, and not on the basis of any intrinsic merits of the idea, but just kind of, oh, I'm more virile than you are because you're in favour of a Swiss type option, and I want no deal with them at all. You know, which is every bit as crazy in its tribalism as the second referendum movement. And I'm afraid it has made compromise impossible. And this is the curse of our age, this determination to speak only to your own side.
All right, Dan, we've got to get you over to the IPA's event, so thank you so much for coming on the Young IPA
Great
podcast.
Great pleasure, guys. Really thank appreciate you so much. It.
Okay, we are now joined in the studio for the first time. Someone we've had a long and fruitful relationship with over the phone, but now in the studio, in person, so much better. Renee Gorman, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again. Now, nice to be in studio.
It's fantastic. So, yeah, this is how it all gets made. So, are you impressed? What are your initial reactions to the studio?
Unimpressed.
It's very nice. It's very green.
Yes.
I like it.
The studio is nice.
The studio is very nice. Yeah. And a lot of filming equipment around here as well, which I'm liking. Cool. So, let's talk about it. So you are making the move down to Melbourne. You're going to be joining us full-time in office as the national manager of our Generation Liberty program. That's going to be pretty exciting.
International manager.
International manager?
Well,
intergalactical.
Presumably. Like this,
yeah. Well, you know, there's no other Generation Liberty, so technically I am the universal manager. Yeah. Of
World king.
Yeah, absolutely. The intergalactical manager of the IPS Generation Liberty project. That's got to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's really crazy. It is really strange because I've actually wanted to work for the IPA for a very long time. I remember watching IPA people on the drum and thinking they are really switched on. They're really smart. I wish I could work for that organization, and now it's happening.
Yeah, here we are. Very cool. Do you remember which staff member that was?
Not us.
Well, I've never been on the drum, so it can't be.
I think it was Berg.
Berg? Okay. Yeah, he's a smart cookie. That guy's very good. So let's talk about it. So National Manor Drew Generation Liberty. Now, that's a new title. Generation Liberty is something the IPA has been doing for a while. It's just growing and growing and growing. But the first time we've had a national manager. So what do you reckon you'll be getting up to as national manager?
So the main thing I'm going to be doing is making Generation Liberty bigger and better than ever. We're going to be expanding.
Shots fired at Matthew Leshen, former managers.
Well, Matthew has much more other responsibilities, while my focus is completely going to be Generation Liberty.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's going to get bigger and better than ever. We're going to have more campus coordinators, more events, bigger events. It's a very exciting time.
You mentioned the other day how much growth there's been in Generation Liberty. Do you want to talk through that for our listeners?
So right now we are actually signing on multiple campus coordinators in all these new universities, which will be announced soon. And it's really engaging and fun work going out and meeting new coordinators who are enthusiastic, ready to go, keen to help. And I really love what I do. I've got a great job.
Now, it just occurred to me that a few of our listeners, especially first-time listeners, might not know what Generation Liberty is.
And welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Apologies. Do you want to just quickly talk us through what Generation Liberty is?
So Generation Liberty is pretty much the youth wing of the IPA. It's a program that reaches out to young people, not only on campus, but everywhere, and tries to enlighten and educate them on ideas of free markets, individual responsibility, and classical liberal ideas.
Yep, terrific, terrific.
Yeah, so very cool. So let's talk about that growth. Now, how many campus coordinators do we have when you started here? Because it wasn't that many, and now we have...
Thousands. Yeah. Like, almost.
Within reach, within reason.
So when I started, I think we had 4. And if right now it looks like we're going to have 13, lucky 13.
Very lucky.
Very lucky number. And we're going to keep expanding. Our goal eventually...
And that's in like a year and a half tops, I think.
Yeah.
How long have you been campus coordinator?
Yeah, I've only been a campus coordinator for a year and a half. And our goal in the end is to have a campus coordinator on every campus in Australia.
That would be quite something. Do we have any sort of other targets, like any milestones coming up that you're aware of?
The other milestone we really want to hit is Generation Liberty is going to be doing a lot more content and online content to reach young people. And our eventual goal is to be reaching 10% of young people nationally, which I think we will get there.
That's very, very cool.
Exciting.
All right. So for those new listeners, for people that are involved with the Generation Liberty program, where can people go if they want to get involved?
So you can go to the IPA website and sign up to join Generation Liberty, or you can look us up on Facebook and see our events. We've got a few exciting events coming up, or you can follow us on most social media platforms.
Yeah, cool. Let's talk about that event that's coming up, because that looked a lot of fun. The one in November, it's like the Freedom Drinks.
So this is on November 24th. It's called Freedom Party. It's on the last day of exams in New South Wales, and it's actually a costume party. So we want people to come dressed as something freedom-based. So I'm going to be going as Margaret Thatcher.
Of course you
are. And one of the other coordinators is going as Jordan Peterson. And we're going to have prizes for best costume. We're getting a DJ. There's going to be pizza. There's going to be beer. It's going to be a great night.
That would be large.
This is the first I've heard of this. Do you not get invited if you're old?
Well, I think you guys
are young
and
hard, Pete.
It's going to be an interesting day down in Victoria, because it's actually the same day as the Victorian election. So okay, you guys will have that to entertain you while we have beer, pizza and dancing.
Well, I'm going to come as small government.
Oh, damn. I was trying to think of a good costume.
I'm going to come as
define
low
small
taxes.
Government to me.
Well, you'll see.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go as decreasing red tape. So I'm just going to like start off with like enclosing red tape. And as the night goes on, it just gets less and less and less.
More and more cut.
Yeah.
I want to see a Braveheart. There has to be a Braveheart.
Oh, there'll
turn
be a Braveheart.
Up. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some sort of William Wallace figure. Cool. So let's move on. So part of the new national, what did we settle on? International. International manager of Generation Liberty. So you're going to be making the big move down from Sydney to Melbourne. So my first question is, have you heard from the University of Sydney about how excited they are that you're leaving the city? Like, have they offered you a lift to the airport? Maybe they would have paid for first class just to make sure you got on the plane.
I think Michael Spence is probably going to have a going away party for me, but I don't think that I'm invited. The problem for him is that I did just choose a replacement for me, so I may be leaving, but a little part of me is still going to be there in the form of the new campus coordinator, and I definitely will be coming back to visits because, you know, he might get a little bit lonely without me.
Yes.
Michael Spence, of course, is he the Vice Chancellor, is he?
Yes, he is the Vice Chancellor of Sydney University, who remains to this day, keeps saying that Sydney University is a place of free speech and free ideas, and there is no problem with diversity of thought at Sydney University, which it's hard to believe that anyone thinks that after... I think he must not get out of his office much.
Yeah, very fair. Do you want to quickly run through some of the run-ins you've had with him?
Mm.
So the first run-in I had with him was for my first campus coordinator event, which was the dangers of socialism. And the university administrations sent me a security fee of $740, saying that our event had the potential to have protests, and that, you know, we had to foot the bill. And then no protesters showed up and we still had to foot the bill.
Yep.
And then the next run-in was for the event, the case for coal. And in that circumstance, the university said, we're not going to give you a number. We are just going to let you know that we can charge you whatever we like for security, and we can do it at any moment leading up to the event. So that was quite crazy to hear. And that's when we went out to the media and started complaining. And it kind of almost got this ball rolling on what is actually, you know, actually being discussed in the Senate right now. Is it reasonable that students have to pay to be safe on campus just to discuss ideas?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's
victim shaming.
Yeah, exactly. And this might have been before, yeah, it was before you were involved with Generation Liberty, but the Red Pill was also another one.
Yeah, so how I actually almost got noticed by the IPA is I screened the Red Pill at Sydney University, and the union banned me that time. The university also slapped a security fee on that event as well. And it was kind of the precedent that they started charging me security for everything else, because they said, oh, Renee Gorman, she had a protest at her last event, so all her events are going to be like that, so let's start charging her so she stops.
I wonder if it's stuff. Like, that's like an auto reply on this guy's email, the same way you do like an out of office thing. It's just like the second he gets an email, you know, subject line Renee Gorman, the reply is just install like security fee.
I wouldn't know how to set that up.
But it's okay,
Pete. Others might.
I'll explain to you afterwards. All right, let's say the other side I want to talk about is moving from Sydney to Melbourne. So you're sort of here, you've been in and out between Sydney and Melbourne the last few weeks. You're going to make the permanent move soon. What sort of differences are you noticing between Melbourne and Sydney, the far superior city, and then the city that you're coming from?
Twice as much rain in Sydney. People don't know that.
Well, I actually don't live in Sydney. I actually live in a regional town just outside of Sydney called Wollongong.
Oh, the Gong.
Impartial.
But I was also raised in Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
I left when I was 18. Oh, I ran away when I was 18. So this is a little bit of a homecoming, and I think it's quite funny because I left as a girl who wanted to be an artist, who was left-leaning and went to the most unionized high school in Australia.
Which is?
Brunswick Secondary College.
Oh.
And I come back as a member of the as a staff member for the IPA, so I come back as a very, very different person. But differences between Sydney and Melbourne... I actually really like Melbourne. It's very foodie and I like food and I like the artsy culture side, but there are so many bloody socialists here. It is the most lefty city ever. So that I am coming to the source of all lefty socialism to fight from the inside.
Well, there you go. I it's interesting they went to Brunny High because Brunny is actually a hotbed of IPA people. I live there. Morgan Begg used to live there. And you makes three, so.
And Darcy? Oh, no, that was...
Nah.
He's closer to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm near Brunswick. This is a bit of IPA geography for people that want to put out a map of where we all live.
Lots of IPA in the Melbourne's lefty inner north.
Yes.
Yeah, I lived in Brunswick before it was cool. When I was there, it wasn't anywhere near as hipster, and now it's
hipster central. Super hipster. It is ground zero of hipsterdom. Cool. Well, this was... Yeah, so this final question was going to be on the basis that Pete and I both thought you were born and bred in Sydney.
This really ruins the fun.
Yeah, it does ruin the fun, but we can save this. Do you have a footy team? Because we were going to say if you were raised in Sydney and you're moving to Melbourne, the number one thing you need to do is pick a footy team. So do you have a footy team?
Actually, I do. Because I was raised in Melbourne, and my this is my family's football team, and I am going to have to get used to a lot more wooden spoons because I am a Carlton supporter. Yay.
Well, so Peter and I were going to make the pitch for you to join one of our teams. And if you aren't looking forward to a future of wooden spoons, maybe Peter and I could tickle the fancy. So Pete, both get 20 seconds to pitch our respective teams.
Well, you're obviously a bit of a contrarian.
Yes.
That's, you know, you don't mind being unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go along and support one of these teams like Richmond or Carlton or Collingwood or Essendon, which everyone goes for, just like everyone supports lefty social justice causes. Go for the Mighty Ds, the smart team.
Have you guys ever won a premiership?
We have. And yes.
That's 20 seconds. That's 20 seconds. All right. Okay. My pitch, Pete. Time me. Renee, how do you feel about winning?
I like winning.
How do you feel about recency bias?
How did Richmond go in their last game?
How did Melbourne go in theirs? Sorry, this is my time. Look, Richmond, they are going to be very good the next couple of years, I hope. You never know what happens, but they're going to be very good. They've just come off a premiership, and now they've come off losing in a heartbreaker in
20 seconds.
Oh, damn. Okay, well, I was interrupted. Anyway, write a reply, Pete.
Nah, let's go for it.
All right, well, who made the more convincing pitch?
I'm going to go for James.
Thank you.
Mainly because I just
we
think,
don't want you.
I think tigers are cool. I like cats.
Very cool. Oh, and there was this other thing. You're a big Jordan Peterson guy, and he's got that rule, like, clean your room.
Yep.
Yeah, Trent Cotchin cleans up after Richmond's captain cleans up the change rooms after a match. Because you've always got to clean your room.
Though I do actually lean pretty heavy towards Melbourne as well, because I used to know Jim Stein very well. So,
oh,
you know,
that's true.
Oh, there's arguments on both sides.
Well,
or you could stay loyal.
Yeah, or I could just, you know, get used to keep losing, go the Mighty Blues.
We'll see. Anyway, Renee, thank you so much. So excited to have you in Melbourne. Get involved in the Generation Liberty program for our listeners out there. Renee, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you to Dan Hannon and Renee Gorman for those interviews. Let's fly through some stories that made us laugh this week. And I think this one really... This was an article. There was a lot going on in this article.
This was an article.
Yeah.
This is... Now, we don't like to...
Sometimes an article will come along and you'll just go, that's an article.
Yeah.
That is an article.
Yep.
All right, let's get into it.
Take it from us.
Take it from us.
We don't normally like to laugh at other people's misfortunes or get political on this podcast, but this is quite funny. Joanna Neilson, Greens candidate for the upper house here in Victoria, stepped down during the week from her candidacy as Facebook posts emerged of what she had written from a few years ago, so she was forced to step down. Pretty standard in politics these days. So I'll just read a few choice...
Before we get into it, though...
Quotes? Before we get into it?
Before we get into it, can we please stop with the Facebook comments coming out? Like, they wrote it 8 years later?
Yeah.
Like, just as... I mean, these are very bad, so I'm not saying that this shouldn't be a story, but just, like, can everyone just agree to... Because there are people out there that definitely have like screenshots of Facebook comments of someone they know will run for parliament one day, and they're just like, can't wait to destroy their life.
Yeah.
Just delete them.
Well,
what are you doing? We just like, seriously, politicians should run on issues. It's not like, oh, this person 9 years ago said something bad on Facebook.
Especially, like, my theory was that it would just be mutually assured destruction. Like, eventually everyone would have all these stupid quotes.
Yeah.
But I think these days people understand what it's like.
Yeah.
Whereas we didn't back in the day.
No, I think it will be mutually assured destruction, but now it's like, you know, oh, I'm not running yet, so I'll get mine out of the way now, and then when I run, I don't know what it is, but can we stop
it's
doing
just
it?
Teenagers putting stuff on and not thinking about it. Anyway, that got all serious for a second. Let's run through a few of these quotes. So this is Joanna Neilson. She's resigned from the candidacy. She has bragged that she's the baddest shoplifter there is. And I quote, take a plastic bag full of other stuff, put it in your basket, and then load all the expensive stuff in the take it out and go through the checkout with that on your arm.
Jeez. The Young IPA podcast does not endorse that action.
Pop through a soda water.
Sorry, I just need to get the legal out of the way.
The boy's in legal. pop through a soda water, bingo, $70 of groceries for 70 cents. Now, I don't understand how that all works, but the upshot of all that is she's nicking 70 bucks off some hardworking proprietor.
Yeah. Taken on face value, if you are nicking 70 bucks of groceries for 70 cents, then you are the baddest shoplifter there is. Like, great. Like, I've got to say, if she wants to say that she's the baddest shoplifter there is, she has grounds to say that.
Yeah. She's also written in a separate post, she attacked federal Liberal Minister Michaela Cash as an effing disgusting smug parrot and added, a woman in the effing Liberal Party is like a Jew in the Nazi Party. They're all just caring, sharing environmentalists, James.
Yeah, yeah.
The Greens.
Just hug a tree.
Just,
you know, a little less climate change.
Yeah.
A little less climate change.
A few more platypuses.
Yeah. Come on.
Hungover.
Yep.
Late for work and I stink of the weed in my bag.
Haven't all been there.
So yeah, anyway, they're the quotes that she's got the flick for.
So like we said, that's an article.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on in that article. This person has had an active social media presence in her time. One thing I really want to unpack the shoplifting thing here. At one point, that's the one I really want to talk about. At one point in the article, in the Facebook conversation about shoplifting, Miss Nilsson said she loved, quote, just strolling out with a hot chook. Now,
I missed that one.
That's incredible.
I love strolling
out. If you have strolled out with a shoplifted chicken, like, look, if some people will nick a few grapes, I'm not one of them, they'll have a few grapes as they stroll around.
Yeah.
Some people might, you know, do something. A full chicken.
Yeah.
Like a warm chicken.
Like a warm chicken. Like I have.
In a bag.
This is good to go right now.
Yeah.
That's brazen. That is the baddest shoplifter alive.
That is brazen. And look, the self-serving checkouts have really opened this up for people.
Yeah, but this is like from 2011.
Is it?
Yeah. These posts are from a while ago, my man. Like this.
My man.
Joanna Nilsson strolling by the actual checkout person with a hot chicken and not paying for it.
Oh, okay. I didn't get that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
baddest shoplifter there is. All right. Sorry. The other part.
It's
like
this part.
There's so many parts. It's an IKEA furniture of a story. Yeah. So the other part for me. Are you that surprised that someone running for the Greens wants to confiscate private property from other people? Are you that surprised?
Political.
Are you that surprised that someone's like, the big shopping centres don't deserve that much profit? Like, if anything, I would have used that in my campaign pamphlet.
Yeah.
Like, I've been stealing from companies for years. I'm going to keep stealing from them, but also I'm going to go work at Parliament.
This is the people's hot chook.
Yeah.
And I'm reappropriating it.
Yeah.
All right.
Like Jesus with the fishes, I guess. Just like everyone can get a bit of chicken.
Yeah, chicken.
All right. Chicken. So I've got another one here. VC exams are happening in Victoria right now, the year 12 exams. Good luck to my little brother who is sitting them. And he was part of the English exam. The English exam, this story comes out every few years, but there's one part of the English exam, which is language analysis. They'll give you like an article and they'll say, oh, what are some of the things that the author's talking about here and how do they talk about it?
Oppression is the thing.
Society. Capitalism. Hot chook.
What's another one? No, that's it.
So that's basically the idea. And they're always like, they had to stop using actual articles because people would like, you know, they're teenagers. As we've discussed, teenagers are teenagers and they will go online after the article and they will be mean to the person that wrote the article because they are teenagers. Like, not directly mean, but they'll be indirectly mean.
Well, they'll be saying, this is a stupid article.
Oh, this is a stupid article. I remember, like, when I was in year 12, it was like it was a terrible article. It's just like, basically just summing up why people have tattoos. And we had to like analyze like what she was talking about.
Okay.
And like all these Facebook groups sprung up of like people getting tattoos just despite the author and stuff like that. So they're now fake.
Of course, we didn't have Facebook when I did year 12.
Really?
So
were the cave paintings like though?
We had to walk to work, yeah. In school in bare feet through the snow. Anyway, carry on.
So this year it was like this review of this fictional review of Karma Cafe. And by a fictional man called Jonty Jenkins. And two parts of this story. Not as big as the other story, but there's still two parts. One, so this Jonty Jenkins fictional fellow took umbrage at Karma Cafe's, quote, exhaustive list of frappes, soy and almond milks, and a tablet-wielding employee with a man bun and its bland burnt coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything more inner-city Melbourne education department than just going like, oh, this is something the kids want to talk about?
Yeah.
This is something.
Let's engage with the youngins.
What did Bendigo Year 12 students want to talk about? Man buns.
Yeah.
Man buns and bad coffee.
They would probably agree with the flavour of the article.
It was a little old man yelling a clout.
Not that we think kids in Bendigo are old men yelling at clouds.
No.
But I'll take your point.
Yeah. That's the most inner city Melbourne thing in the world. It's like, oh, this will be something the kids can analyze and it'll be kind of fun. But it turns out, so that's one part. It turns out
part two.
Karma Coffee Cafe has a very similar name to an actual cafe.
Yep.
Called Karma.
Yeah, called Karma.
In
Karma
Aberfeldy.
Cafe, in Aberfeldy. And they have an employee with a man bun. No, they don't. A fictional cafe. I think she said she did.
No,
Miss Conran said she employed someone with a man bun.
Ooh.
In my...
Oh, note off.
In my... The article I read, she said, we don't have anyone with a man bun.
Well, might as well change her tune because I'm definitely looking
at... Are you sure you're not reading the bit from the actual
Miss Conran said she employed someone with a man bun. She also employs a manager as the same last name as a fictional author of the cafe review in the exam.
All right, well, we can take this off.
This is a note off. Nina, who do you believe more?
I'm definitely right, but we can...
Nina,
you go.
This is two different articles, I think.
Yeah. So who's...
Two different articles, two different items. I don't know. It depends on who's the latest one.
Well, sorry.
Who's the latest?
My research, the latest ones are published.
Not the ones.
I think mine was the... mine was the piece you sent.
Nina should run for parliament.
Yeah, that was very...
She had a yes-no answer and sated both parties.
And actually sounded sensible as well.
Yeah. Do you want to host a podcast? Anyway, so the sad part of this is, so the Karma Cafe, it's Karma Cafe, right? I'm seeding some ground here. Yeah, so their hard-earned Google reviews fell from almost five stars to 3.3 stars on Wednesday. Mm. Again, teenagers being teenagers, would just log on and give crappy reviews like, oh, the man bun and the burnt coffee and stuff like that. So that's very sad.
Mm.
Teenagers stopped doing that.
But like 100 kids jumped on and gave it a bad review.
Yeah, but just like from the Victorian Education Department, just Google search. Like if you're going to do the fake cafe, you got like Karma Cafe is a pretty good name for a cafe.
Mm.
Oh. You don't think someone in Victoria has already thought of that as well?
My assumption is that whoever wrote this just wrote about their own experience.
I think they had to lease fiction. Oh, so see, this is the other thing. Like, so there are so many coincidences.
So that person's already been to that cafe and have this bad experience, whatever.
Or even just a good experience but needed to write.
Oh, just give some like spice.
Yeah,
add some things on it.
That's my son.
Oh, only he just like went to this cafe and coincidentally on that day, that person saw a person with a man bun and had a bad coffee.
Yeah.
And then just put everything together.
Yeah.
Have you ever hated a coffee so much you wanted to destroy someone's business by telling every year 12 student in the state about it?
Mm. No.
I haven't.
Haven't?
No.
So, yeah, weird story. But, yeah, you just got to go like Fakey Fakerton as the cafe name. Just protect your base like that.
Yep.
Anyway.
Or get him to study Hamlet.
Oh.
All right. Now,
what Hamlet. Was Shakespeare trying to say with Hamlet?
I don't know.
If Hamlet had a man bun, would any of this have happened?
He might have thought.
Hamlet would definitely have a man bun, by the way.
How do you know?
Just like reading Hamlet, just seeing what he's about. He'd be a man bun kind of guy.
He would. All right.
Then. He'd be really into Tame Impala.
I have nothing to add on any of that.
Okay, sure.
All right,
fine. Don't come with me on this, but you know I'm right.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Ben and Jerry's, which are an ice cream company in the United States and Australia, who have released a new type of ice cream called pecan.
Pecan. Pecan?
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 Resist. Pecan Resist. So it is a brand of ice cream to resist the Trump administration. Their statement said...
That'll do it.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's right. At Ben & Jerry's, we believe we can no longer remain silent in the face of President Trump's policies that attack and roll back decades of progress... Oh, yeah, right. ...on racial and gender equity, climate change, LGBTQ rights, and refugee and immigrant rights, all issues that have been at the core of the company's social mission for 40 years.
Mm.
Now, of course, James, they're perfectly entitled to do this.
Yes.
If they want.
Mm-hmm.
What I would question, though, is has Trump really made no impact on stuff like gender and racial equity? I've got a few stats for you, James, and I've said them on the podcast before. Lowest African-American unemployment rate in history under the Trump regime, or administration. Regime is a bit creepy. Lowest Hispanic unemployment rate in history, almost lowest female unemployment rate in history. I think it was the lowest people who had dropped out of lowest unemployment rate for people who dropped out of high school. So it raises a good question. They've raised a question, Ben and Jerry. Would you rather, if you lived in an impoverished community in the United States, get nice speeches from Obama or a job?
Which one has ice cream?
The impoverished one.
Mm. Good question.
Mm. That's the variable you haven't thought of. I also like this. So you talk like if you're Ben and Jerry's and you're like, look, how do we stand up? Assuming that they stand by everything they're saying and they really care about it and they really want to stand up to the Trump administration, they go, how can we stand up for all of these things that this company has cared about for so long? I've got it. A new flavor.
Yeah.
What's the flavor again?
It's like someone else is like getting out the big donation check like, oh, let's make a real thing here. It's like, whoa. No, not with the donation. Let's make some money out of this. New flavor.
The flavor is called Pecan Resist.
Like is that supposed to be like We Can Resist?
Maybe.
Yeah.
So it's pecan flavor then.
Yeah, I'll show you. There it is. Good radio there.
Purposes of the tape, James is showing Nina. No, but I mean, as I say, look, I have no problem with corporates getting involved in politics. That's a good thing. But let's talk about impact.
Mm.
Let's talk about social change.
It's a very, very worthy point by you, Pete.
Well,
in the funny part of the show.
That's my brand.
All right, cool. Last thing I'm going to talk about here. So this is a very wild... This is another article. So an instructor in a socially harmful cult sold taxpayer-funded DVDs to parents that said autistic children could see spirits and illnesses from past lives with the permission of the Federal Department of Social Services. That's a sentence.
What?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Do they get funding?
No, so they receive taxpayer subsidies under the federal government's Helping Children with Autism package as part of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Now, with a big funding program like that, you're always going to have like some offshoot of like, oh, that money probably wasn't there. Or like, oh, that probably play shouldn't have got as much cash as it did. I would say someone that believes that autistic children are seeing visions from past lives, that's pretty egregious.
It is, yeah.
You don't want to be giving them federal funding.
Well, the government spent money on worse.
Well, sorry, like...
But I take your point.
Yeah, so it provides an example of like they sent a DVD to parents with autism, for parents of children with autism. And the DVD provides an example of a child becoming distressed at a site where loss of life occurred in the past life and the child apparently seeing illness.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Clanger.
That's it. That's a bad one.
It's quite grim, isn't it?
That's going to really show up in the end of year report, I reckon.
Yeah,
this is not great. So basically, the company is called Fabic. And they get taxpayers... they're receiving taxpayer subsidies under the federal government. They're called behavior specialists, which should really... That should either tell you to stay away or at least have them run the Adelaide Crows preseason trip. That's another Regatron moment for me there. And they basically... like they talk about how we see results where previous other ones failed. Which is that classic, like, do you know what they call alternative medicine that works?
Yeah.
Medicine.
Yeah.
That's a clanger. You don't want to be given the money.
Yeah, no, look, that seems like something that might go in the challenges column of the public service rubric.
Yes, exactly. All right. So that's it for the show this week. Thanks again to Dan Hannon and Renee Gorman for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. Make sure you are checking out Generation Liberty. If you are under the age of 25 and you do want to get involved with the IPA, Generation Liberty is a place to go. Renee is going to manage that thing extremely well.
Yep.
And take it to the brand new heights that she referenced in the conversation. So make sure you are subscribed to the podcast. Make sure you're telling your friends and family about the show. We're available on iTunes, Podbean, Pocket Cast, anything that you guys want. We're available there. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us that 5-star rating. If you do want to go see that Hannon interview on YouTube, it's on YouTube. We're going to put out some teasers on Facebook as well, some of his best answers. So have a look out for those. Nina, if people want to become members of the IPA, if they want to support our work, and if they want to get discount invites, sometimes even free invites to future events like the Dan Hannon one, where can they go?
Just visit the website at ipa.org.au and click on the join button, fill up your details, and starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the Lotus Voice of Freedom in Australia.
All right, see you guys next week.
Cool, say up. Yeah, I cherish you, my love.